Mr. Doug Fry, Reel 11. Now, when these sort of old prisoners arrived, but amongst them was your flight engineer, wasn't there?
Yes, that's right.
Now, there's a bit of a story about this, because last time we saw him, he was sort of waving you goodbye without helping you.
Well,
could you tell us a bit about meeting him again, and what happened?
Yes. Well, the one after we'd been there a couple of days and we got to know these people that were coming in, lo and behold, I saw my flight engineer, Dick Richards. And he'd been, after he'd been interrogated, he'd been sent to Bath. He hadn't been wounded in any way and so on, so he'd gone straight to interrogation after being picked up, straight to Dulagluft, had the interrogation, and then gone to Bath. So he ended up in our compound. Anyway, he showed, he was very surprised to see me, and he apologised for not helping me, because having passed me with the flames roaring past me, I was lying on the floor of the aircraft. He thought I'd already died. He thought I'd been killed, and therefore there was no point in trying to help me. So he walked straight past me, although I did actually see him go past and go out the rear escape hatch. So anyway, he apologised for that, which was, I thought, very gentlemanly of him. He's
you,
a good lad.
You didn't bear a grudge then?
Oh, absolutely not, no. I understood.
And what state were you in, your wounds, by this time, when you were in this?
I was absolutely fit and healthy. No problem at all. My bit of shrapnel on my left side hadn't bothered me in the least. My wrist was okay. Although I still had a pin in my wrist. They hadn't taken that out. And it hit the bone, this tiny bit of, it was only a small piece, it hit the bone and skidded along, and it made a bump in my wrist, which was a bit awkward. I used to bump it now and again, it was a bit sore, but that's all. And of course that was taken out eventually when I came home. And so...
how was the camp organised? What was the British organisation of the camp?
Excellent. Vic Clark, as I say...
Tell me a bit about Vic Clark. VIC? Or
yeah, just Vic. Yeah, Clark.
And what rank was he?
He was a sergeant and a wireless operator, shot down in 42. And now he'd been a toy salesman, so he'd done a lot of work in that capacity in Germany, so he spoke excellent German. So he was a natural, it seemed, at the... when he was at Bath to become their camp leader. And he continued in that duty when they got to Heiderkrug, you see. So he was a good chap, a very
good
chap.
But he wasn't a senior British officer, was he? Or was this an NCO's camp?
It was NCO. This was entirely NCO's camp now, that was. So that was him. He was our camp leader.
So he was a senior British officer.
Yeah, in effect, he liaised with the Germans.
How did he do that? I mean, how well did he do, would you say?
Very well indeed. Excellent. Excellent chap. Really was.
Could he get done for you or prevent the Germans from doing?
Well, it was just a question of if they wanted to, say, stop us from having something or doing something for some reason... he would argue or negotiate with them, or if the mail was being delayed in being delivered to us, he may have a word with them about that. He was in constant contact with them and constant discussion with them, and that was what he did on our behalf.
Now, what other elements of organisation were put in place?
Wow, they were brilliant. You had all these clever chaps, electricians and carpenters, and as I say, a brilliant example is the Canadian Red Cross parcels came in plywood chests, like tea chests. So all that timber that was utilised, and when they arrived, and we had this hut for admin hut, two or three admin huts at the end of the compound. One of them was for so we could made into a theatre. They made all these bucket seats out of the Red Cross, the Canadian Red Cross crates. They made stage, orchestra pit, and the electricians amongst them fitted up lights, with rheostats so they could be dimmed, out of all sorts of bits and pieces. And so you had, you got all these clever taps all together doing all this, so there would be this marvellous theatre. And of course, they had already already done plays at Bath and so on, so they just continued doing their plays.
Were you involved in any of the productions?
No, I wasn't, no.
What kind of show was on?
There were musical shows, because there were lots of musicians amongst the chaps, incredibly. Musical show, band shows, plays, and so on. And of course, some of the chaps grew their hair and took the women's parts. And a lot of the YMCA played a very important part in our POW activities, because they had a rep come every 6 months, apart from the Red Cross, who was the protecting power, the Swiss protecting power. And they would arrange and provide for stuff like makeup for the shows and clothing and all sorts of stuff like that, and arrange for a piano and so on. And eventually, also, they arranged for a nice two-tabled amplifier for us.
And that was the YMCA?
YMCA, yeah.
And they were brilliant. Were the shows good? Were they actually good? Or was
brilliant.
It?
Well, I can relate. Several of them became actors here when they came home, continued and became professionals. And I can't think of their names offhand, but they might come to me in a minute. But they were marvellous. Rupert Davis, for example, if you remember, he used to do the May Gray film, films on TV. He was in the camp. Roy Dotrice, the actor, he was. And several others, they all came back. Harmonica player, Jimmy Prescott became one of the three monarchs that used to be on radio and so on. So you can tell the talent that was there, and they were all thoroughly enjoyable, and musicians, they were that clever that they could keep playing a record, and write the music, the actual arrangement from there, and then play that arrangement after taking it off a record. Incredible, really. Wonderful stuff. So they were jolly good. And then they would put these shows on, and there'd be boxing matches. I don't know where they got the strength from, the chaps, but they did. There used to be boxing matches that were set up also there in the theatre. So yeah, everything
what
was what everything
about
was
sport awkward. Generally?
And sport, it? Yeah, there'd be football matches, inter-hut football matches, or Scotland v England and all that business. You know, just
any other sport, or was it just football?
No, it was just football. It was just football, really.
And did you get involved?
Well, we used to play football anyway, have a kick around. Oh, rugby. Used to play rugby. Some of the chaps used to play rugby.
What about educational classes?
Education, yes, there were that. As soon as I arrived, when all these other guys arrived from Bath, I thought, I'll study insurance. I had that in mind, and also German. So there was one guy, he had one course, it was a correspondence course, the Metropolitan College of London. They issued these courses, and it happened to be it was only one course of the, there were three books in this course, and this one was on claims, I think it was. So I borrowed it from him, but before I had a chance to get into it, he wanted it back, and there weren't any others. And also, I borrowed a German book to learn German. I thought that might come in handy if I ever get the chance to escape. However, this blooming book was in Gothic print, and I couldn't understand it, so I checked that in as well. I couldn't get on with that, and lots of other chaps couldn't either. So I never bothered about that.
Were there any actual educational classes in insurance? Or
No, there wasn't. If anything was done, it was done through correspondence courses. And some chaps did. They got down to it, some of these prisoners, the chaps that were prisoners for a long while, and they got down to it, and they actually passed these courses and got diplomas and stuff. And I admire them greatly for being able to do that amongst all the sort of the racket that went on in the barrack rooms. But I think there's a certain philosophy here. They were shot down, say, just take aircrew, shot down in the early days. So when I arrived, they'd already been prisoners for about 3 or 4 years. So they had, I think, this sort of outlook of not knowing when the war was going to end and possibly being there forever. Whereas I was shot down in 43, and I knew by now that what we were in the RAF were doing and what was happening as well in the war generally. So I had a feeling that I was only a prisoner on a temporary basis, if you can understand what I'm saying. So therefore, I think my outlook, and maybe my contemporaries also who have just been made prisoners, was different to the older prisoners.
Now, what about contacts with home? Either letters from home or letters
well,
to
I've
home?
Been there some time, and eventually, my mother didn't know that I was a prisoner until about 3 months afterwards, because I think everything points to the fact that the Germans thought I was going to die, and they didn't report to the International Red Cross. In fact, their casualty card to the Red Cross mentions 5 dead. And I was we always assumed that it was me being the 5th one. And because I didn't get a POW number there with my rear gun, I did, and I didn't. I didn't get my number until I got to Dulagluft. So there's this sort of feeling that they didn't want to report me as being a POW, and then I would have died, and then they would have had to report that I died, and all the questions that would have been asked. So I think that's why it was rather a long period. In fact, she didn't know. When I got to Dulagluft, I wrote a card. But she never seemed to have got the card that my rear gunner wrote to her, because that wasn't amongst the stuff that I've got. She kept everything, but my mother kept everything. But that. So I can't understand why she would have been the first. She would have definitely kept it. So maybe she never got it. So the first she knew was when my card from Dulagluft eventually got there, because they used to take several weeks to get there anyway. It wasn't an overnight delivery, as it were. So it was some time. Anyway, one day, the first lot of mail came up for us new prisoners, and about 3 chaps in my billet got a letter, and I didn't. But a couple of days later, some more mail arrived, and I got my first letter from home. And we had... So we were allowed 1 card a week and a letter form a month to send home. So that was our communication. So so after that, and then we're also allowed, next of kin, we're allowed to send a parcel every 3 months, £10 in weight, and that could include no food was allowed to be sent, but clothing, shaving gear, clothing, underwear, handkerchiefs, socks, gloves, whatever, pyjamas.
Now, when did you get a parcel?
Eventually, I got a parcel. Yes, my first parcel, and then it was all the goodies, the pyjamas were missing, because they used to be all the parcels and mail used to go first to Luft 3 at Sagan, and get censored, and inspected, and the parcels were opened. So somebody nicked my pyjamas. So I never did in the pyjamas, whilst I was a prisoner. So, but nevertheless, everything else with detached shaving gear and stuff like that, and soap, dentifrice, weren't allowed to send stuff in tubes, because you can hide things in tubes. So it was solid dentifrice, razors, of course. My mother sent me a packet of a little box of Keatings in case we had fleas. What else did we have? We weren't allowed to send scissors. So she sent needles and thread, she sent some darning wool, cotton, handkerchiefs, of course, shirts, a couple of shirts, I needed them, some underwear, I think I got. So everything that I needed on the spot was there, great, wonderful. And also, you can make the weight up with chocolate and chewing gum. Some are. They used to put in some chocolate and some chewing gum. It got special dispensation to send that. And she got extra coupons, of course, for the stuff that was rationed, the clothing that was rationed and so on.
Now, what was a typical day's routine then for you in the
camp? Well, there wasn't much doing if you weren't involved in anything. Like most of us weren't really. It was only a certain section of chaps, and once more, though, mostly the older chaps had been prisoners a long time.
What time would you get up?
We had a roster for cleaning the billet for a start, and for emptying the night latrine. We did that, and we also had a roster for pumping up water. There was a pump in the camp for the water, and next to the ablutions and the toilets, or the lavatories. And so we had a roster for that. So we did have duties to do, all of us, in turn. So we did all that. And also, over the cookhouse, pilling the spuds. So we all had something to do all the time to keep things going.
So what time would you get up?
Well, get up. First roll call, I think, was 8 o'clock in the morning. So we had to get up before then. The appel, as it was called, roll call.
What was the roll call like? What was the typical roll
call?
Well,
we used to line up by huts in two rows, because the huts were in two rows. So J and K. So we lined up like that, and then we were counting in fives out on the big field that we used as a sports field as well. It was only mud, there was no grass on it. And so we'd line up there, the German commandant would come strutting in with all the guards, extra guards, and Vic Clark would call us to attention, and then we'd be made at ease, and they used to go around then counting us in fives. So we used to muck about a bit and mess them up now and again, so that they got rather annoyed at times. And just generally mess about, you know, to make things rather difficult for them. That was a bit of a hobby. And then when they got too annoyed, then we would quietly let them count us properly and then clear off back to the billets. Then there might be a football match to watch. I'd walk around the compound several times for exercise and so on. And that's about it, really. Do a bit of washing. We had a shower once a week in these rather crude showers, and the water was usually lukewarm. The water was heated. We used to pump the water up. That went into like a wooden tank, and from there it was. If there were two coppers, ordinary with a fire built underneath, the old-fashioned coppers. And that used to heat the water. That was ladled into another tank, which was then gravity fed into the shower room. If you were very lucky, if you ever completed a shower, because the water would run out, it would be only lukewarm anyway. But nevertheless, it was something. And then the cold water, was then fed also through to the ablutions room where the troughs were, and taps, cold water taps. So that was where we got the water from and where we washed and so on. And then next to that was the old thunder boxes, the latrines, which were just holes built along in the big cesspits. Horrible. Poor.
I mean, were they regularly emptied?
They were regularly emptied, yes, by a vacuum system. They would the cart would come up and they'd make an explosion to cause a vacuum, and that would suck it all out into this tank, into the tank, which was then carted out, a horse and cart thing, sort of thing. So that was that. So we settled down.
How did you get on with the other lads? Because, you know, living on top of each other and that sort of thing.
Brilliant, brilliant, no problem. No problem at all. Everybody was always in good humour, it seems. And no, it was fine.
There's no stress or arguments or fights?
No. Oh, well, yeah, there used to be fights now and again. Not much, really, you know, temper flare over something or other.
Did you ever get involved in
it? No, never. No, a very placid sort of chap. But fortunately, I was lucky, because Ginger Lucas, my old chum from the Air Defence Cadet Corps, the ATC, he was in my billet with me, you see. He came up from Dulag Love with me, And then there was another chap, Danny Heath, who we got friendly with. So there were three sort of musketeers, if you like. So we just used to mess about and muck about. After all, we were very young. I was only 19 when I was shot down. So whilst we might have been aircrew, we were still sort of young at heart, if you like. So we merely almost treated being a POW as a sort of another posting, really, and just didn't let it get us down. Just used to mess about. Young people would mess about, and so we went to the shows and so on. They had to be allocated, and they were invariably at night, of course. So the Germans used to allow us to come out of the billets and go to these shows.
How did you get on with the German guards?
Just ignored them. We used to have the goons come, what we called the goons coming round, and the ferrets. The ferrets were the Abwehr security buds, and they used to come round regularly, and the call would go goon up, and they used to walk through the huts, prodding through the floor to see if there's any tunnels being built with their steel rods and everything. But no, we never bothered.
So you didn't talk to them?
No.
You've got something. You used to tease the guards a bit.
Oh, all the time.
Well, tell us about that.
Yeah, I was saying we used to do things like just moving slightly so that they couldn't count us properly. And then there would be, they used to always, when they marched off after parade, with their rifles slung over their backs, pointing skywards, we'd come up behind and pour dust down into their rifles or put a cigarette end in. And all that sort of silly nonsense like that, you know. And there was, on the opposite block, there were some guys, there were five of them, and they used to play trains during rappel. And of course, the Germans' sense of humour couldn't cope with all this, and that's where we used to irritate them and mess them about. They used to play trains, they used to pretend they were shunting rail trucks, and they would do all the actions and blow the whistle and all this, you know, and all the movements. And the Germans used to look at this. They just couldn't understand it. And of course, the Kriegers, being what they would make alter clothing so that they, for example, they would cut the leg off a pair of long johns and make a hat which flowed like a pirate cap and all that. And the first commandant we had when we arrived there, big tall Prussian guy with the usual Julian scars and a monocle. He complained to Vic Clark because he said these men are standing on parade and cigarettes hanging out their mouth and these funny hats on and so on. Sometimes in the morning, first of all, they put their greatcoats over their pyjamas and so on parade. He said they're supposed to be soldiers, not clowns. because nothing came of that. Vic Clark didn't tell the chap to get himself dressed up for parade. So that's the sort of thing that we went on. And then the real pièce de résistance, we went down one day, and to overcome all this nonsense and messing about, we got the first parade of the day, the first roll call of the day. It was a rotten day, it had been raining, it was all mud everywhere. And we got round onto the parade ground, and there was a funnel of rope had been made onto, rather like they used to do with the old cross country. You have a funnel, you run into it a funnel made on metal rope on metal rods, and there were two guards down there, and we're supposed to walk through here, and they count us one by one, sheep count, we called it sheep count. But of course, the brilliant organisers, the Germans were, they totally forgot, once we'd been counted, to make us clear off out the way. So consequently, we kept going round and round and round. So they were getting more and more irate, keep counting the same bods over and over again. And then the Dolmetscher, the German interpreter, got a table out and stood up on it, called us all round and said, boys, he said, please, he said, all your comrades are out here in the rain and the mud. He said, let us get on with it. So we just hear that, oh, get stuff and so on, usual stuff. And so he got down off his table and cleared off. Anyway, they got fed up with this in the end after counting us about four times, and all the whistles started to blow, and the heavy brigade came in with their machine guns and extra dogs. So we thought it was time to call it a day, so we all went quietly back to our billets. Needless to say, we never had a sheep count anymore. Oh dear, oh dear. And then, I think we now got to Christmas. We had a Christmas tree that out. The Germans brought in a Christmas tree they put up in the theatre, and we had a barrel of beer per hut from Königsberg that they brought in. God, onion, made with onions. It was horrible, this beer. God, dear, oh dear. So that was that. We couldn't do that stuff. Couldn't even wash in it. So anyway, the barrel looked good. That's big old fashioned barrel standing in the billet. So that got we had Christmas parcels came in because it was to be special parcels for Christmas, which might have had a Christmas. The British parcel, for example, we had a cake in a tin, but when we opened the tin, all the cakes that were opened had about an inch of mildew on top, strangely enough. Anyway, that was scraped off. So there used to be little extra treats. Also, that particular, my first Christmas there, a lot of bulk stuff came in from Argentina. All the British expats who lived in Argentina, they used to club together, and they sent this stuff out. So there was different sorts of chocolate came in bulk, some cheeses, big cheeses, and canned chops, if I remember rightly, corned chops. I never had them before or since. So that was a bit of extra food we had in for the Christmas. So that went. It was a very severe winter up in East Prussia, very severe indeed.
Well, what was the weather like? I mean, how bad was it in the huts in that bad weather?
Very cold, of course, because these fire things we had were very inefficient, and it was extremely, extremely cold. Snow, of course, plenty of snow and ice. Of course, the Canadians, being Canadians, they'd had some ice skates sent out, and they tried to make an ice rink. So they managed to get some timber from the Germans. Special Vic Clark negotiated that to get this ice rink made. So we had a rotor then. It was all us Kriegers pumping up buckets of water and chucking on the ground for it to freeze. Well, it did freeze for a little bit, but not long. And then something upset the Germans for some reason or other, and they took all the timber away, and that was that. So that put paid to the Canadians having an ice hockey match between the huts.